Some things are in our control, and others not. Things in our control are opinion, pursuit, desire, aversion, and in a word, whatever are our own actions. Things not in our control are body, property, reputation, command, and in one word, whatever are not our actions. The things in our control are by nature free, unrestrained, unhindered. But those not in our control are weak, slavish, restrained, belonging to others. Remember then that if you suppose that things which are slavish by nature are also free, and that which belongs to others is your own, then you will be hindered, you will lament, you will be disturbed, and you will find fault with both gods and men. But if you suppose that only to be your own which is your own, and what belongs to others, such as it really is, then no one will ever compel you or restrain you. Further, you will find fault with no one, or accuse no one. You will do nothing against your will. No one will hurt you. You will have no enemies, and you will not be harmed. When you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surly. They are like this because they can't tell good from evil. But I have seen the beauty of good and the ugliness of evil, and have recognized that the wrongdoer has a nature related to my own. Not of the same blood and birth, but the same mind, and possessing a share of the divine. And so none of them can hurt me, no one can implicate me in ugliness, nor can I feel angry at my relative or hate him. We were born to work together, like feet, hands, and eyes, like the two rows of teeth, upper and lower. To obstruct each other is unnatural. To feel anger at someone, to turn your back on him, these are unnatural. Some identify happiness with virtue, some with practical wisdom, others with a kind of philosophical wisdom, others add or exclude pleasures, and yet others include prosperity. We agree with those who identify happiness with virtue, for virtue belongs with virtuous behavior, and virtue is only known by its acts. If someone is able to show me that what I think or do is not right, I will happily change, for I seek the truth, by which no one was ever truly harmed. It is the person who continues in his self-deception and ignorance who is harmed. These reasonings are unconnected. I am richer than you, therefore I am better. I am more eloquent than you, therefore I am better. The connection is rather this. I am richer than you, therefore my property is greater than yours. I am more eloquent than you, therefore my style is better than yours. But you, after all, are neither property nor style. How long are you going to wait before you demand the best for yourself, and in no instance bypass the discriminations of reason? You have been given the principles that you ought to endorse, and you have endorsed them. What kind of teacher, then, are you still waiting for in order to refer your self-improvement to him? You are no longer a boy, but a full-grown man. If you are careless and lazy now, and keep putting things off, and always deferring the day after which you will attend yourself, you will notice that you are making no progress, but you will live and die as someone quite ordinary. From now on then, resolve to live as a grown-up who is making progress, and make whatever you think best a law that you never set aside. And whenever you encounter anything that is difficult or pleasurable, or highly or lowly regarded, remember that the contest is now. You are at the Olympic Games. You cannot wait any longer, and that your progress is wrecked or preserved by a single day and a single event. That is how Socrates fulfilled himself, by attending to nothing except reason in everything he encountered. And you, although you are not yet a Socrates, should live as someone who at least wants to be a Socrates. You know yourself what you are worth in your own eyes, and at what price you will sell yourself. For men sell themselves at various prices. This is why when Florus was deliberating whether he should appear at Nero's shows, taking part in the performance himself, Agrippinus replied, "Appear by all means." And when Florus inquired, "But why do you not appear?" he answered, "Because I do not even consider the question. For the man who has once stooped to consider such questions, and to reckon up the value of external things, is not far from forgetting what manner of man he is." True happiness is to enjoy the present without anxious dependence upon the future, not to amuse ourselves with either hopes or fears, but to rest satisfied with what we have, which is sufficient. For he that is so wants nothing. The greatest blessings of mankind within us, and within our reach. A wise man is content with his lot, whatever it may be, without wishing for what he has not. Wild animals run from the dangers they actually see, and once they have escaped them, worry no more. We, however, are tormented alike by what is past and what is to come. A number of our blessings do us harm, for memory brings back the agony of fear, while foresight brings it on prematurely. No one confines his unhappiness to the present. Most of what passes for legitimate entertainment is inferior or foolish, and only caters to or exploits people's weaknesses. Avoid being one of the mob who indulges in such pastimes. Your life is too short, and you have important things to do. Be discriminating about what images and ideas you permit into your mind. If you yourself don't choose what thoughts and images you expose yourself to, someone else will, and their motives may not be the highest. It is the easiest thing in the world to slide imperceptibly into vulgarity, but there's no need for that to happen if you determine not to waste your time and attention on mindless pap. So you wish to conquer in the Olympic Games, my friend, and I too, but first mark the conditions and the consequences. You will have to put yourself under discipline, to eat by rule, to avoid cakes and sweet meats, to take exercise at the appointed hour, whether you like it or not, in cold and heat, to abstain from cold drinks and wine at your will. Then, in the conflict itself, you are likely enough to dislocate your wrist or twist your ankle, to swallow a great deal of dust and be severely thrashed, and after all of these things, to be defeated. Tentative efforts lead to tentative outcomes. Therefore, give yourself fully to your endeavors. Decide to construct your character through excellent actions and determine to pay the price of a worthy goal. The trials you encounter will introduce you to your strengths. Remain steadfast, and one day you will build something that endures, something worthy of your potential. Live a good life. If there are gods and they are just, then they will not care how devout you have been, but will welcome you based on the virtues you have lived by. If there are gods, but unjust, then you should not want to worship them. If there are no gods, then you will be gone, but will have lived a noble life that will live on in the memories of your loved ones. Concentrate every minute like a Roman, like a man, on doing what's in front of you with precise and genuine seriousness, tenderly, willingly, with justice. and on freeing yourself from all other distractions. Yes, you can, if you do everything as if it were the last thing you were doing in your life, and stop being aimless, stop letting your emotions override what your mind tells you, stop being a hypocrite, self-centered, irritable. You see how few things you have to do to live a satisfying and reverent life. If you can manage this, that's all even the gods can ask of you. At dawn, when you have trouble getting out of bed, tell yourself, I have to go to work as a human being. What do I have to complain of if I'm going to do what I was born for, the things I was brought into the world to do? Or is this what I was created for, to huddle under the blankets and stay warm? So you were born to feel nice instead of doing things and experiencing them. Don't you see the plants, the birds, the ants and spiders and bees going about their individual task, putting the world in order as best they can? And you're not willing to do your job as a human being. Why aren't you running to do what your nature demands? You don't love yourself enough, or you love your nature too, and what it demands of you. Men are not disturbed by things, but by the views which they take of things. Thus death is nothing terrible, else it would have appeared so to Socrates. But the terror consists in our notion of death, that it is terrible. When therefore we are hindered, or disturbed, or grieved, let us never impute it to others, but to ourselves. That is, to our own views. It is the action of an uninstructed person to reproach others for his own misfortunes, of one entering upon instruction to reproach himself, and of one perfectly instructed to reproach neither others or himself. For what prevents us from saying that the happy life is to have a mind that is free, lofty, fearless, and steadfast? A mind that is placed beyond the reach of fear, beyond the reach of desire, that counts virtue the only good, baseness the only evil, and all else but a worthless mass of things which come and go without increasing or diminishing the highest good, and neither subtract any part from the happy life nor add any part to it. A man thus grounded must, whether he wills or not, necessarily be attended by constant cheerfulness and a joy that is deep and issues from deep within, since he finds delight in his own resources and desires no greater joys than his inner joys. My advice is really this: what we hear the philosophers saying and what we find in their writings should be applied in our pursuit of the happy life. We should hunt out the helpful pieces of teaching and the spirited and noble-minded sayings which are capable of immediate practical application, not far-fetched or archaic expressions or extravagant metaphors and figures of speech, and learn them so well that the words become works. No one, to my mind, lets humanity down quite so much as those who study philosophy, as if it were a sort of commercial skill, and then proceed to live in a quite different manner from the way they tell other people to live. For it is dangerous to attach oneself to the crowd in front, and so long as each one of us is more willing to trust another than to judge for himself, we never show any judgment in the matter of living, but always a blind trust, and a mistake that has been passed on from hand to hand finally involves us and works our destruction. It is the example of other people that is our undoing. Let us merely separate ourselves from the crowd, and we shall be made whole. But as it is, the populace, defending its own iniquity, pits itself against reason. And so we see the same thing happening that happens at the elections, where, when the fickle breeze of popular favor has shifted, the very same persons who chose the praetors wonder that those praetors were chosen. Or is it your reputation that's bothering you? But look at how soon we're all forgotten. The abyss of endless time that swallows it all. The emptiness of those applauding hands. The people who praise us. How capricious they are. How arbitrary. And the tiny region it takes place. The whole earth a point in space. And most of it uninhabited. Just that you do the right thing, the rest doesn't matter. Cold or warm, tired or well rested, despised or honored, dying or busy with other assignments. Because dying too is one of our assignments in life. There as well, to do what needs doing. Look inward. Don't let the true nature of anything elude you. Before long, all existing things will be transformed. To rise like smoke, assuming all things become one, or be dispersed in fragments, to move from one unselfish act to another, with God in mind. Only there delight and stillness, when jarred unavoidably by circumstances, revert at once to yourself, and don't lose the rhythm more than you can help. You'll have a better grasp of the harmony if you keep going back to it. Difficulty shows what men are. Therefore, when a difficulty falls upon you, remember that God, like a trainer of wrestlers, has matched you with a rough young man. Why? So that you may become an Olympic conqueror, but it is not accomplished without sweat. Your happiness depends on three things, all of which are within your power. Your will, your ideas concerning the events in which you are involved, and the use you make of your ideas. Don't just say you have read books. Show that through them you have learned to think better, to be a more discriminating and reflective person. Books are the training weights of the mind. They are very helpful. But it would be a bad mistake to suppose that one has made progress simply by having internalized their contents. Never depend on the admiration of others. There is no strength in it. Personal merit cannot be derived from an external source. It is not to be found in your personal associations, nor can it be found in the regard of other people. It is a fact of life that other people, even people who love you, will not necessarily agree with your ideas, understand you, or share your enthusiasms. Grow up. Who cares what other people think about you? It is not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters. He who laughs at himself never runs out of things to laugh at. Only the educated are free. The greater the difficulty, the more glory in surmounting it. Skillful pilots gain their reputation from storms and tempests. He is a wise man who does not grieve for the things which he has not, but rejoices for those which he has. Seek not the good in external things, seek it in yourselves. If anyone tells you that a certain person speaks ill of you, do not make excuses about what is said of you, but answer, "He was ignorant of my other faults, else he would not have mentioned these alone." Any person capable of angering you becomes your master. He can anger you only when you permit yourself to be disturbed by him. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. Don't explain your philosophy, embody it. There is only one way to happiness, and that is to cease worrying about the things which are beyond the power of our will. If you want to improve, be content to be thought foolish and stupid with regard to external things. Don't wish to be thought to know anything, and even if you appear to be someone important to others, distrust yourself, for it is difficult to both keep your faculty of choice in a state conformable to nature, and at the same time acquire external things. But while you are careful about the one, you must of necessity neglect the other. The key is to keep company only with people who uplift you, whose presence calls forth your best. If you would be a reader, read. If a writer, write. God has entrusted me with myself. No man is free who is not master of himself. A man should so live that his happiness shall depend as little as possible on external things. The world turns aside to let any man pass who knows where he is going. Remember, it is not enough to be hit or insulted to be harmed. You must believe that you are being harmed. If someone succeeds in provoking you, realize that your mind is complicit in the provocation, which is why it is essential that we not respond impulsively to impressions. Take a moment before reacting, and you will find it easier to maintain control. A ship should not ride on a single anchor, nor a life on a single hope. Demand not that things happen as you wish, but wish them to happen as they do, and you will go on well. Remember that you ought to behave in life as you would at a banquet. As something is being passed around, it comes to you. Stretch out your hand, take a portion of it politely. It passes on, do not detain it. Or it has not yet come to you, do not project your desire to meet it, but wait until it comes in front of you. So act toward children, so toward a wife, so toward office, so toward wealth. Events do not just happen, but arrive by appointment. Either God wants to abolish evil and cannot, or he can but does not want to. It is unrealistic to expect people to see you as you see yourself. You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength. Casting aside other things, hold to the precious few, and besides bear in mind that every man lives only the present, which is an indivisible point, and that all the rest of life is either past or is uncertain. Brief is man's life, and small the nook of earth where he lives. Brief too is the longest posthumous fame, buoyed only by a succession of poor human beings who will very soon die and who will know little of themselves, much less of someone who died long ago. The soul becomes dyed with the color of its thoughts. Do not act as if you were going to live 10,000 years. Death hangs over you. While you live, while it is in your power, be good. Dwell on the beauty of life, watch the stars, and see yourself running with them. Think constantly on the changes of the elements into each other, for such thoughts wash away the dust of earthly life. The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. If it is not right, do not do it. If it is not true, do not say it. If any man despises me, that is his problem. My only concern is not doing or saying anything deserving of contempt. The first rule is to keep an untroubled spirit. The second is to look things in the face and know them for what they are. Never let the future disturb you. You will meet it, if you have to, with the same weapons of reason which today arm you against the present. How much time he gains who does not look to see what his neighbor says or does or thinks, but only at what he does himself, to make it just and holy. Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking. Whenever you are able to find fault with someone, ask yourself the following question. What fault of mine most nearly resembles the one I am about to criticize? If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it, and this you have the power to revoke at any moment. The happiness of your life depends upon the quality of your thoughts. Everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. Everything we see is a perspective, not the truth. I have often wondered how it is that every man loves himself more than all the rest of men, but yet sets less value on his own opinion of himself than on the opinion of others. Perfection of character is this: to live each day as if it were your last, without frenzy, without apathy, without pretense. A person's worth is measured by the worth of what he values. Observe always that everything is the result of change, and get used to thinking that there is nothing nature loves so well as to change existing forms and make new ones like them. Be like the cliff against which the waves continually break, but it stands firm and tames the fury of the water around it. A man must stand erect, not be kept erect by others. Limiting one's desires actually helps to cure one of fear. Cease to hope, and you will cease to fear. Widely different as fear and hope are, the two of them march in unison like a prisoner and the escort he is handcuffed to. Fear keeps pace with hope. Both belong to a mind in suspense, to a mind in a state of anxiety through looking into the future. Both are mainly due to projecting our thoughts far ahead of us instead of adapting ourselves to the present. No one could endure lasting adversity if it continued to have the same force as when it first hit us. We are all tied to fortune, some by a loose and golden chain, and others by a tight one of baser metal. But why does it matter? We are all held in the same captivity, and those who have bound others are themselves in bonds. Unless you think perhaps that the left-hand chain is lighter. One man is bound by high office, another by wealth, good birth weighs some down, and a humble origin others. Some bow under the rule of men, and some under their own. Some are restricted to one place by exile, others by priesthoods. All life is a servitude. So you have to get used to your circumstances, complain about them as little as possible, and grasp whatever advantage they have to offer. No condition is so bitter that a stable mind cannot find some consolation in it. As far as I am concerned, I know that I have lost not wealth, but distractions. The body's needs are few. It wants to be free from cold, to banish hunger and thirst with nourishment. If we long for anything more, we are exerting ourselves to serve our vices, not our needs. And so there is no reason for you to think that any man has lived long because he has grey hairs or wrinkles. He has not lived long. He has existed long. For what if you should think that man had had a long voyage, who had been caught by a fierce storm as soon as he left the harbour, and swept hither and thither by a succession of winds that raged from different quarters, had been driven in a circle around the same course. Not much voyaging did he have, but much tossing about. We suffer more in imagination than in reality. If you want to escape the things that harass you, what you're needing is not to be in a different place, but to be a different person. Sometimes even to live is an act of courage. Fire tests gold, suffering tests brave men. Enjoy present pleasures in such a way as not to injure future ones. They lose the day in expectation of the night, and the night in fear of the dawn. It is not that we have so little time that we lose so much. The life we receive is not short, but we make it so. We are not ill provided, but use what we have wastefully. Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. The greatest obstacle to life is expectancy, which hangs upon tomorrow and loses today. You are arranging what lies in fortune's control and abandoning what lies in yours. What are you looking at? To what goal are you straining? The whole future lies in uncertainty. Live immediately. If a man knows not to which port he sails, no wind is favorable. Anger, if not restrained, is frequently more hurtful to us than the injury that provokes it. All cruelty springs from weakness. Difficulties strengthen the mind, as labor does the body. Withdraw into yourself as far as you can. Associate with those who will make a better man of you. Welcome those whom you yourself can improve. The process is mutual, for men learn while they teach. He who spares the wicked injures the good. You act like mortals in all that you fear, and like immortals in all that you desire. He suffers more than necessary who suffers before it is necessary. A gift consists not in what is done or given, but in the intention of the giver or doer. People are frugal in guarding their personal property, but as soon as it comes to squandering time, they are most wasteful of the one thing in which it is right to be stingy. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. To win true freedom, you must be a slave to philosophy. It is a rough road that leads to the heights of greatness. Often, a very old man has no other proof of his long life than his age. No man is crushed by misfortune unless he has first been deceived by prosperity. Man conquers the world by conquering himself. Better to trip with the feet than with the tongue. Well-being is realized by small steps, but is truly no small thing. Nothing is more hostile to a firm grasp on knowledge than self-deception. The goal of life is living in agreement with nature. We have two ears and one mouth, so we should listen more than we say. If you lay violent hands on me, you'll have my body, but my mind will remain with Stilpo. Happiness is a good flow of life. A bad feeling is a commotion of the mind repugnant to reason and against nature. No loss should be more regrettable to us than losing our time, for it's irretrievable. Wealth is able to buy the pleasures of eating, drinking, and other sensual pursuits, yet can never afford a cheerful spirit or freedom from sorrow. In our control is the most beautiful and important thing, the thing because of which even the God himself is happy, namely, the proper use of our impressions. We must concern ourselves absolutely with the things that are under our control and entrust the things not in our control to the universe. If you accomplish something good with hard work, the labor passes quickly, but the good endures. If you do something shameful in pursuit of pleasure, The pleasure passes quickly, but the shame endures. Choose to die well while you can. Wait too long, and it might become impossible to do so. If we were to measure what is good by how much pleasure it brings, nothing would be better than self-control. If we were to measure what is to be avoided by its pain, nothing would be more painful than lack of self-control. From good people you will learn good, but if you mingle with the bad, you'll destroy such soul as you had. You will earn the respect of all if you begin by earning the respect of yourself. Don't expect to encourage good deeds in people conscious of your own misdeeds. Since every man dies, it is better to die with distinction than to live long. To accept injury without a spirit of savage resentment, to show ourselves merciful towards those who wrong us, being a source of good hope to them, is characteristic of a benevolent and civilized way of life. We will train both soul and body when we accustom ourselves to cold, heat, thirst, hunger, scarcity of food, hardness of bed, abstaining from pleasures, and enduring pains. What good are gilded rooms, or precious stones fitted on the floor, inlaid in the walls, carried from great distances, and at great expense? These things are pointless and unnecessary. Without them, isn't it possible to live healthy? Aren't they the source of constant trouble? Don't they cost vast sums of money that, through public and private charity, may have benefited many? Being good is the same as being a philosopher. If you obey your father, you will follow the will of a man. If you choose the philosopher's life, the will of the universe. It is plain, therefore, that your duty lies in the pursuit of philosophy. For mankind, evil is injustice and cruelty and indifference to a neighbor's trouble, while virtue is brotherly love and goodness and justice and beneficence and concern for the welfare of your neighbor. Husband and wife should come together to craft a shared life, procreating children, seeing all things as shared between them, with nothing withheld or private to one another, not even their bodies. They who have a care for their souls, and do not merely live in the fashions of the body, say farewell to all this. They will not walk in the ways of the blind, and when philosophy offers them purification and release from evil, they feel that they ought not resist her influence, and to her they incline, and whither she leads they follow her. The man who makes everything that leads to happiness depend upon himself, and not upon other men, has adopted the very best plan for living happily. This is the man of moderation, the man of manly character and of wisdom. If you don't get what you want, you suffer. If you get what you don't want, you suffer. Even when you get exactly what you want, you still suffer because you can't hold on to it forever. Your mind is your predicament. It wants to be free of change, free of pain, free of the obligations of life and death. But change is a law, and no amount of pretending will alter that reality. I desire only to know the truth, and to live as well as I can, and, to the utmost of my power, I exhort all other men to do the same. I exhort you also to take part in the great combat, which is the combat of life, and greater than every other earthly conflict. Two distinctive traits especially identify beyond a doubt a strong and dominant character. One trait is contempt for external circumstances, while one is convinced that men ought to respect, to desire, and to pursue only what is moral and right. That men should be subject to nothing, not to another man, not to some disturbing passion, not to fortune. The second trait, when your character has the disposition I outlined just now, is to perform the kinds of service that are significant and most beneficial. But they should also be services that are a severe challenge, that are filled with ordeals, and that endanger not only your life, but also the many comforts that make life attractive. Of these two traits, all the glory, magnificence, and the advantage too, let us not forget, are in the second, while the drive and discipline that make men great are in the former. For there is but one essential justice which cements society, and one law which enables this justice. This law is right reason, which is the true rule of all commandments and prohibitions. Whoever neglects this law, whether written or unwritten, is necessarily unjust and wicked. Moral excellence is concerned with pleasure and pain. Because of pleasure, we do bad things, and for fear of pain, we avoid noble ones. For this reason, we ought to be trained from youth, as Plato says, to find pleasure and pain where we ought. This is the purpose of education. Is happiness to be acquired by learning, by habit, or some other form of training? It seems to have come as a result of virtue and some process of learning, and to be among the godlike things, since its end is godlike and blessed. Man is a tame or civilized animal. Nevertheless, he requires proper instruction and a fortunate nature. And then, of all animals, he becomes the most divine and the most civilized. But if he be insufficiently or ill-educated, he is the most savage of earthly creatures. In order for a man to succeed in life, God provided him with two means, education and physical activity. Not separately, one for the soul and the other for the body, but for the two together. With these means, we can attain perfection. The inexperienced in wisdom and virtue, ever occupied with feasting and such, are carried downward, and there, as is fitting, they wander their whole life long, neither ever looking upward towards the truth above them, nor rising toward it, nor tasting pure and lasting pleasures, like cattle, always looking downward with their heads bent towards the ground and the banquet tables, they feed, fatten, and fornicate. In order to increase their possessions, they kick and butt, with horns and hooves of steel they kill each other, insatiable as they are. Six mistakes mankind keeps making century after century, believing that personal gain is made by crushing others, worrying about things that cannot be changed or corrected, insisting that a thing is impossible because we cannot accomplish it. Refusing to set aside trivial preferences, neglecting development and refinement of the mind, attempting to compel others to believe and live as we do. Never discourage anyone who continually makes progress, no matter how slow. He who is only an athlete is too crude, too vulgar, too much a savage. He who is a scholar only is too soft, too effeminate. The ideal citizen is the scholar athlete, the man of thought, and the man of action. Strange times are these in which we live, when old and young are taught falsehoods in school. And the person that dares to tell the truth is called at once a lunatic and fool. Wise men talk because they have something to say, fools because they have to say something. Imagine that the keeper of a huge, strong beast notices what makes it angry, what it desires, how it has to be approached and handled, the circumstances and the conditions under which it becomes particularly fierce or calm, what provokes its typical cries, and what tone of voice makes it gentle or wild. Once he's spent enough time in the creature's company to acquire all this information, he calls it knowledge, forms it into a systematic branch of expertise, and starts to teach it, despite total ignorance, in fact, about which of the creature's attitudes and desires is commendable or deplorable, good or bad, moral or immoral. His usage of all these terms simply conforms to the great beast's attitudes. And he describes things as good or bad according to its likes and dislikes, and can't justify his usage of the terms any further, but describes as right and good the things which are merely indispensable, since he hasn't realized and can't explain to anyone else how vast a gulf there is between necessity and goodness. It is the task of the enlightened not only to ascend to learning and to see the good, but to be willing to descend again to those prisoners and to share their troubles and their honors, whether they are worth having or not. And this they must do, even with the prospect of death. I thought to myself, I am wiser than this man. Neither of us probably knows anything that is really good, but he thinks he has knowledge when he has not, while I, having no knowledge, do not think I have. Those who are able to see beyond the shadows and lies of their culture will never be understood, let alone believed, by the masses. Bodily exercise, when compulsory, does not harm the body, but knowledge which is acquired under compulsion obtains no hold on the mind. Human behavior flows from three main sources: desire, emotion, and knowledge. Evil is the vulgar lover who loves the body rather than the soul, inasmuch as he is not even stable, because he loves a thing which is in itself unstable, and therefore, when the bloom of youth, which he was desiring, is over, he takes his wings and flies away, in spite of all his words and promises, whereas the love of the noble disposition is lifelong, for it becomes one with the everlasting. The greatest wealth is to live content with little. No matter how hard you fight the darkness, every light casts a shadow. And the closer you get to the light, the darker the shadow becomes. The man who finds that in the course of his life, he has done a lot of wrong, often wakes up at night in terror, like a child with a nightmare, and his life is full of foreboding. But the man who is conscious of no wrongdoing is filled with cheerfulness and with the comfort of old age. Either we shall find what it is we are seeking, or at least we shall free ourselves from the persuasion that we know what we do not know. One of the penalties of refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. There are three classes of men: lovers of wisdom, lovers of honor, and lovers of gain. There is in every one of us, even those who seem to be the most moderate, a type of desire that is terrible, wild and lawless. If men learn this, it will implant forgetfulness into their souls. They will cease to exercise memory because they rely on that which is written, calling things to remembrance no longer from within themselves, but by means of external marks. What you have discovered is a recipe not for memory, but for reminder. And it is no true wisdom that you offer your disciples, but only its semblance. For by telling them of many things without teaching them, you will make them seem to know much, while for the most part, they know nothing. And as men filled not with wisdom, but with the conceit of wisdom, they will be a burden to their fellows. A hero is born among 100, a wise man is found among 1,000, but an accomplished one might not be found even among 100,000 men. And so when a person meets the half that is his very own, whatever his orientation, then something wonderful happens. The two are struck from their senses by love, by a sense of belonging to one another, and by desire, and they don't want to be separated from one another, not even for a moment. In politics, we presume that everyone who knows how to get votes knows how to administer a city or state. When we are ill, we do not ask for the handsomest physician or the most eloquent one. You know that the beginning is the most important part of any work, especially in the case of a young and tender thing, for that is the time at which the character is being formed, and the desired impression is more readily taken. Shall we just carelessly allow children to hear any casual tales, which may be devised by casual persons, and to receive into their minds ideas for the most part very opposite of those which we should wish them to have when they grow up? We cannot. Anything received into the mind at that age is likely to become indelible and unalterable, and therefore it is most important that the tales which the young first hear should be models of virtuous thoughts. Only a philosopher's mind grows wings, since its memory always keeps it as close as possible to those realities by being close to which the gods are divine. Man is a prisoner who has no right to open the door of his prison and run away. A man should wait and not take his own life until God summons him. That's what education should be, I said. the art of orientation. Educators should devise the simplest and most effective methods of turning minds around. It shouldn't be the art of implanting sight in the organ, but should proceed on the understanding that the organ already has the capacity, but is improperly aligned and isn't facing the right way. When someone sees a soul disturbed and unable to see something, he won't laugh mindlessly, but he'll take into consideration whether it has come from a brighter life and is dimmed through not having yet become accustomed to the dark, or whether it has come from greater ignorance into greater light and is dazzled by the increased brilliance. Love is born into every human being. It calls back the halves of our original nature together. It tries to make one out of two and heal the wound of human nature. Do not train a child to learn by force or harshness, but direct them to it by what amuses their minds, so that you may be better able to discover with accuracy the peculiar bent of the genius of each. I will begin to speak when I have that to say which had better not be unsaid. Consider it the greatest of all virtues to restrain the tongue. I know not what treason is, if sapping and betraying the liberties of people be not treason. Some have said that it is not the business of private men to meddle with government, a bold and dishonest saying, which is fit to come from no mouth but that of a tyrant or a slave. To say that private men have nothing to do with government is to say that private men have nothing to do with their own happiness or misery, that people ought not to concern themselves whether they be naked or clothed, fed or starved, deceived or instructed, protected or destroyed. An honest man is seldom a vagrant. By liberty, I understand the power which every man has over his own actions, and his right to enjoy the fruits of his labor, art, and industry, as far as by it he hurts not the society or any members of it, by taking from any member, or by hindering him from enjoying what he himself enjoys. The fruits of a man's honest industry are the just rewards of it, ascertained to him by natural and eternal equity, as is his title to use them in the manner which he thinks fit, and thus, with the above limitations, every man is sole lord and arbiter of his own private actions and property. Consider in silence whatever anyone says. Speech both conceals and reveals the inner soul of man. In doing nothing, men learn to do evil. Speak briefly and to the point. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing freedom of speech. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. Flee sloth, for the indolence of the soul is the decay of the body. It is remarkable that men, when they differ in what they think considerable, will be apt to differ in almost everything else. Their difference begets contradiction. Contradiction begets heat. Heat quickly rises into resentment, rage, and ill will. Thus they differ in affections as they differ in judgment. Wise men are more dependent on fools than fools on wise men. The primary virtue is, hold your tongue. Who knows how to keep quiet is close to God. All have the gift of speech, but few are possessed with wisdom. I would not be beholden to a tyrant for his acts of tyranny, for it is but usurpation in him to save, as their rightful lord, the lives of men over whom he has no title to reign. Time obliterates the fictions of opinion and confirms the decisions of nature. Few are those who wish to be endowed with virtue rather than to seem so. God's law is right reason. When perfectly understood, it is called wisdom. When applied by government in regulating human relations, it is called justice. It is not by muscle, speed, or physical dexterity that great things are achieved, but by reflection, force of character, and judgment. A mind without instruction can no more bear fruit than can a field, however fertile, without cultivation. To be content with what we possess is the greatest and most secure of riches. Do not blame Caesar. Blame the people of Rome who have so enthusiastically acclaimed and adored him, and rejoiced in their loss of freedom, and danced in his path, and given him triumphal processions. Blame the people who hail him when he speaks in the forum of the new, wonderful, good society, which shall now be Rome, interpreted to mean more money, more ease, more security, more living fatally, at the expense of the industrious. For while we are enclosed in these confinements of the body, we perform as a kind of duty the heavy task of necessity. For the soul from heaven has been cast down from its dwelling on high and sunk, as it were, into the earth, a place just the opposite to godlike nature and eternity. But I believe that the immortal gods have sown souls in human bodies, so that there might exist beings to guard the world, and after contemplating the order of heaven, might imitate it by their moderation and steadfastness in life. The best armor of old age is a well-spent life preceding it, a life employed in the pursuit of useful knowledge, in honorable actions and the practice of virtue, in which he who labors to improve himself from his youth will in age reap the happiest fruits of them, not only because these never leave a man, not even in the extremest old age, but because a conscience bearing witness that our life was well spent, together with the remembrance of past good actions, yields an unspeakable comfort to the soul. It is the peculiar quality of a fool to perceive the faults of others and forget his own. What is morally wrong can never be advantageous, even when it enables you to make some gain that you believe to be to your advantage. The mere act of believing that some wrongful course of action constitutes an advantage is pernicious. Knowledge which is divorced from justice may be called cunning rather than wisdom. It is a great thing to know your vices. I am not ashamed to confess I am ignorant of what I do not know. The enemy is within the gates. It is our own luxury, our own folly, our own criminality that we have to contend. To be ignorant of what occurred before you were born is to remain always a child. For what is the worth of human life unless it is woven into the life of our ancestors by the records of history? The function of wisdom is to discriminate between good and evil. There exists a law not written down anywhere, but inborn in our hearts, a law which comes to us not by training or custom or reading, but by derivation and absorption and adoption from nature itself, a law which has come to us not from theory, but from practice. Not by instruction, but by natural intuition. I refer to the law which lays it down that if our lives are endangered by plots or violence, or armed robbers or enemies, any and every method of protecting ourselves is morally right. There is, I assure you, a medical art for the soul. It is philosophy, whose aid need not be sought, as in bodily disease, from outside ourselves. We must endeavor, with all our resources and all our strength, to become capable of doctoring ourselves. True law is right reason in agreement with nature. It is of universal application, unchanging and everlasting. It summons to duty by its commands and averts from wrongdoing by its prohibitions. Hours and days and months and years go by. The past returns no more, and what is to be we cannot know. But whatever the time gives us in which we live, we should therefore be content. The man who backbites his absent friend, nay, who does not stand up for him when another blames him, the man who angles for bursts of laughter and for the repute of wit, who can invent what he never saw, who cannot keep a secret, that man is black at heart. Mark and avoid him. If we are not ashamed to think it, we should not be ashamed to say it. The mind becomes accustomed to things by the habitual sight of them, and neither wonders nor inquires about the reasons for things it sees all the time. Men decide far more problems by hate, love, lust, rage, sorrow, joy, hope, fear, illusion, or some other inward emotion, than by reality, authority, any legal standard, judicial precedent, or statute. Any man can make mistakes, but only an idiot persists in his error. Friendship improves happiness, and abates misery by doubling our joys and dividing our grief. Everyone has the obligation to ponder well his own special traits of character. He must also regulate them adequately and not wonder whether someone else's traits might suit him better. The more definitely his own a man's character is, the better it fits him. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all others. For books are more than books. They are the life, the very heart and core of ages past, the reason why men worked and died, the essence and quintessence of their lives. As for myself, I can only exhort you to look on friendship as the most valuable of all human possessions, no other being equally suited to the moral nature of man, or so applicable to every state and circumstance, whether of prosperity or adversity, in which he can possibly be placed. But at the same time, I lay it down as a fundamental axiom that true friendship can only subsist between those who are animated by the strictest principles of honor and virtue. When I say this, I would not be thought to adopt the sentiments of those speculative moralists who pretend that no man can justly be deemed virtuous who is not arrived at the state of absolute perfection, which constitutes, according to their ideas, the character of genuine wisdom. This opinion may appear true, perhaps in theory, but is altogether inapplicable to any useful purpose of society, as it supposes a degree of virtue to which no mortal was ever capable of rising. A mental stain can neither be blotted out by the passage of time, nor washed away by any waters. It would be better for me that the multitudes of men should disagree with me, rather than that I, being one, should be out of harmony with myself. In every one of us there are two ruling directing principles, whose guidance we follow wherever they may lead. The one being an innate desire of pleasure, the other an acquired judgment which aspires after excellence. And so they grow richer and richer, and the more they think of making a fortune, the less they think of virtue. For when riches and virtue are placed together in the scales of the balance, the one always rises as the other falls. Esteemed friend, citizen of Athens, the greatest city in the world, so outstanding in both intelligence and power, aren't you ashamed to care so much, to make all the money you can, and to advance your reputation and prestige, while for truth and wisdom and the improvement of your soul, you have no care or worry? Anyone who holds a true opinion without understanding it is like a blind man on the right road. I honor and love you, but why do you who are citizens of the great and mighty nation care so much about laying up the greatest amount of money and honor and reputation, and so little about wisdom and truth and the greatest improvement of the soul? Are you not ashamed of these? I do nothing but go about persuading you all, old and young alike, not to take thought for your persons or your properties, but and chiefly to care about the greatest improvement of the soul. I tell you that virtue is not given by money, but that from virtue comes money and every other good of man, public as well as private. This is my teaching, and if this is the doctrine which corrupts the youth, I am a mischievous person. There is only one good, knowledge, and one evil, ignorance. False words are not only evil in themselves, but they infect the soul with evil. I did not care for the things that most people care about, making money, having a comfortable home, high military or civil rank, and all other activities, political appointments, secret societies, party organizations which go on in our city. I set myself to do you, each one of you individually and in private, what I hold to be the greatest possible service. I try to persuade each one of you to concern himself less with what he has than with what he is, so as to render himself as excellent and rational as possible. Bad men live that they may eat and drink, whereas good men eat and drink that they may live. If the head and body are to be well, you must begin by curing the soul. That is the first and essential thing. And the care of the soul, my dear youth, has to be affected by the use of certain charms. And these charms are fair words. And by them temperance is implanted in the soul. And where temperance comes and stays, there health is speedily imparted, not only to the head, but to the whole body. Understanding a question is half an answer. When my sons are grown up, I would ask you, my friends, to punish them, and I would have you trouble them, as I have troubled you. If they seem to care about riches, or anything more than about virtue, or if they pretend to be something, when they are really nothing, then reprove them, as I have reproved you, for not caring about that for which they ought to care, and thinking that they are something when they are really nothing. And if you do this, I and my sons will have received justice at your hands. I cannot teach anybody anything. I can only make them think. No man has the right to be an amateur in the matter of physical training. It is a shame for a man to grow old without seeing the beauty and strength of which his body is capable. Contentment is natural wealth. Luxury is artificial poverty. I decided that it is not wisdom that enables poets to write their poetry, but a kind of instinct or inspiration, such as you find in seers and prophets who deliver all their sublime messages without knowing in the least what they mean. Men generally agree that the highest good attainable by action is happiness, and identify living well and doing well with happiness. No one is able to attain the truth adequately, while, on the other hand, no one fails entirely, but everyone says something true about the nature of all things. And while individually they contribute little or nothing to the truth, by the union of all, a considerable amount is amassed. The man who is truly good and sensible bears all fortunes, we presume, becomingly, and always does what is noblest under the circumstances. The wise man does not expose himself needlessly to danger, since there are few things for which he cares sufficiently, but he is willing, in great crises, to give even his life, knowing that under certain conditions, it is not worthwhile to live. we should not only be grateful to those whose opinions we share, but also to those who have gone astray. For even the latter have contributed something, since they have prepared the condition for us. No happy man can become miserable, for he will never do acts that are hateful and mean. All men seek one goal, success or happiness. The only way to achieve true success is to express yourself completely in service to society. First, have a definite, clear, practical ideal, a goal, an objective. Second, have the necessary means to achieve your ends, wisdom, money, materials, and methods. Third, adjust all your means to that end. Every art and every inquiry, and similarly every action and pursuit, is thought to aim at some good. And for this reason, the good has been declared to be that at which all things aim. If there is some end in the things we do, which we desire for its own sake, clearly this must be the chief good. Knowing this will have a great influence on how we live our lives. If things are good in themselves, the good will appear as something identical in them all. But the accounts of the goodness in honor, wisdom, and pleasure are diverse. The good, therefore, is not some common element answering to one idea. We praise the reason or rational part of the soul because it exhorts aright and to the best course. But clearly there is in them, besides the reason, some other natural principle which fights with and strains against the reason. It is absurd to make external circumstances responsible and not oneself, and to make oneself responsible for noble acts and pleasant objects responsible for base ones. We punish a man for his ignorance if he is thought to be responsible for his ignorance. Everything done by reason of ignorance is involuntary. The man who has acted in ignorance has not acted voluntarily, since he did not know what he is doing. Not every wicked man is ignorant of what he ought to do and what he ought to abstain from. By such errors, men become unjust and bad. It is the mark of an educated man to look for precision in each class of thing, insofar as its nature admits. There are three things which inspire confidence in the orator's own character. The three, namely, that induce us to believe a thing apart from any proof of it: good sense, good moral character, and good will. Even if there be one good which is universally predictable or is capable of independent existence, it could not be attained by man. It is absurd to hold that a man ought to be ashamed of being unable to defend himself with his limbs, but not of being unable to defend himself with speech and reason. When the use of rational speech is more distinctive of a human being than the use of his limbs. And if it to be objected that one who uses such power of speech unjustly might do great harm, that is a charge which may be made in common against all good things except virtue, and above all, against the things that are most useful, as strength, health, wealth, generalship, A man can confer the greatest of benefits by a right use of these, and inflict the greatest of injuries by using them wrongly. If we consider the function of man to be a certain kind of life, and this to be an activity of the soul implying a rational principle, and the function of a good man to be the noble performance of these, and if any action is well performed when it is performed in accordance with the appropriate principle, if this is the case, human good turns out to be the activity of the soul in accordance with virtue. Politics appears to be the master of art, for it includes so many others, and its purpose is the good of man. While it is worthy to perfect one man, it is finer and more godlike to perfect a nation. There are three prominent types of life: pleasure, political, and contemplative. The mass of mankind is slavish in their tastes, preferring a life suitable to beasts. They have some ground for this view, since they are imitating many of those in high places. People of superior refinement identify happiness with honor or virtue, and generally the political life. Political science spends most of its pains on forming its citizens to be of good character and capable of noble acts. The life of money-making is one undertaken under compulsion, since wealth is not the good we are seeking and is merely useful for the sake of something else. Knowledge is not necessarily for the possession of virtues, whereas the habits which result from doing just and temperate acts counts for all. By doing just acts, the just man is produced. By doing temperate acts, the temperate man. Without acting well, no one can become good. Most people avoid good acts and take refuge in theory, and think that by becoming philosophers, they will become good. If the virtues are neither passions nor facilities, all that remains is that they should be states of character. Virtue is a state of character concerned with choice, being determined by rational principle, as determined by the moderate man of practical wisdom. The end being what we wish for, the means what we deliberate about, and we choose our actions voluntarily. The exercise of virtues is concerned with means, and therefore both virtue and vice are in our power. Death is the most terrible of all things, for it is the end, and nothing is thought to be either good or bad for the dead. All men agree that a just distribution must be according to merit in some sense. They do not all specify the same sort of merit, but Democrats identify with free men, supporters of oligarchy with wealth or noble birth, and supporters of aristocracy with excellence. When a distribution is made from the common funds of a partnership, it will be according to the same ratio which the funds were put into the business by the partners, and any violation of this kind of justice would be an injustice. People are different and unequal, and yet must somehow be equated. This is why all things that are exchanged must be comparable, and to this end, money has been introduced as an intermediate, for it measures all things. In truth, demand holds things together, and without it, there would be no exchange. There are three kinds of constitution: monarchy, aristocracy, and that based on prosperity, timocratic. The best is monarchy, the worst is timocratic. Monarchy deviates to tyranny. The king looks to his people's interest, the tyrant looks to his own. Aristocracy passes over to oligarchy by the badness of his rulers, who distribute contrary to equity. Most of the good things go to themselves, and office always to the same people, paying most regard to wealth. Thus the rulers are few, and are bad men instead of the most worthy. Timocracy passes over to democracy, since both are ruled by the majority. Of those we have wronged, and of our enemies or rivals, it is not the passionate and outspoken who we have to fear, but the quiet, dissembling, unscrupulous. Since we never know when they are upon us, we can never be sure they are at a safe distance. When people are feeling friendly and placable, they often think one sort of thing. When they are feeling angry or hostile, they think either something totally different or the same thing with a different intensity.